Welcome to Teacher Talks at Valdosta State University with your host, Dr. Forrest Parker, brought to you by the Dewar College of Education and Human Services and the Department of Teacher Education at Valdosta State University.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Teacher Talks here at Valdosta State University. I have a very special guest, JT Cox, here, who is a professor at Valdosta State University. How's it going, JT?
It's going well. Awesome. How are you today, Tripp?
I'm doing pretty well. It's Friday. I normally try not to work on Fridays, but here I am, yep. Just for you.
Here we are.
Here we are in the middle of life. So I'm trying something that I did a few podcasts ago where I just record in an open setting for that just more realistic sound feel. So we'll see how that plays out today. If you hate it, too bad, I guess. Stop listening. But if you enjoy it, keep listening. But I'm pretty excited about this one. So JT, first, I want our listeners to know who you're from. I want them to know where you're from and a little bit more about you. So where are you from originally?
I was born in Tempe, Arizona, in the shadow of Arizona State University.
Oh, wow.
And both of my brothers attended that school. Mm-hmm. Of course, when I was 18, I didn't think that I wanted to go to college. I wanted to be a truck driver.
Oh.
Okay. And so my parents managed to talk me out of that and have me go to school. So I went up to Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff.
Okay.
You're right.
Yeah.
Where I was a communications major as an undergraduate.
Yeah. Right.
Broadcast announcing.
You know, very good.
So.
And did you use that degree in broadcasting?
I used it in and out of school until I became a teacher.
Okay.
So in other words, when I was working on my master's degree,
yeah.
I worked maybe 16 hours a week at a local radio station.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you said you kind of jumped here. You went to being a teacher. What made you want to or need to be a teacher?
Well, to make things even more complicated, a few years before that, I wanted to be a priest.
Oh, okay.
I was actually quite the devout Catholic at one time in my life. And
nice.
And I spent 2 years in the seminary. I went to Mount St. Mary's in Emmitsburg, Maryland, and St. John's Seminary, which is the big seminary for the Archdiocese of Boston.
Okay.
And so the Catholic Church provided me a lovely 2 years of philosophy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't have a degree to show for it.
Sure.
But I studied philosophy at the graduate level for 2 years, thanks to the Catholic Church. And so so at that point in my life, I knew I wanted to be one of two things. I wanted to be a priest or a minister of some sort, or I wanted to be a teacher.
Okay.
And so when the first didn't work out, And I took time off from the seminary and stuff like that. I went back to graduate school to get a master's degree in English.
Yeah.
And then during that time, I just moved increasingly away from the church and just more towards becoming a teacher.
And so did you become a teacher right after you got the degree in English, or just
not long after?
Okay.
So my plan was, when I got my master's degree in English, to be a community college English teacher.
Hmm.
You know, that's what I was thinking I wanted to do. Well, what I didn't realize at the time was that 80% of community college faculties are adjuncts.
Yeah.
You know, so and so those 20% of the full-time gigs are very coveted and competitive and tough to get. So after my parents got tired of me sitting on the couch after graduate school and watching Braves games and stuff in the afternoon, my dad finally said, son, you need to go teach high school or something until you get this figured out.
Yeah.
And I was like, excuse me? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so I did not think I was going to enjoy that at all.
Okay.
Right? Not looking forward, not embracing the idea about working with teenagers.
Yeah.
In a high school setting.
Yeah.
My own high school experience was okay.
Yeah.
But it's not something I spent a lot of time contemplating and thinking
about. Wanted to go back to.
Wanted to go back. Like many of that nostalgia sense of wanting to go back to high school. I didn't have that experience.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure I was going to like this at all. So I enrolled in something called the I-STEP program at NAU, Northern Arizona University.
Uh-huh.
And what this was one semester of intense training.
Mm-hmm.
So we got 16 credit hours in one semester.
Okay.
So Monday through Friday, we were in class every morning from 8 a.m. until noon.
Yeah.
And it was team taught. So there would be the ed psych guy would come in and talk to us about adolescent psychology and all this kind of stuff. And then somebody else would come in and talk about lesson planning. And, you know, it was this kind of thing.
Crash course, seriously.
One semester, 4 hours a day. And then in the afternoon, we weren't necessarily done. On some days we were at noon.
Yeah.
But very often in the afternoon, we had field experiences.
Yeah.
So then we would go out in the local schools and do stuff like that. Well, so I went into this kicking and screaming. And so my first couple of weeks, I was sitting in this class and kind of miserable. And I'm not a morning person anyway. So, I mean, you're going to make me, you know, get up at 6:30, 7 o'clock. And I know we're in a morning person's profession, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Right. But more on that later.
Yeah.
And so I was sitting in this class, you know, and class is not particularly happy. Like I said, I already had a master's degree. So I felt like I had a good handle of the content. And sometimes the content, frankly, of educational courses is a little dry. It's like content without content, you know? And so this is what happened. It was a miracle of sorts. Mr. Holland's Opus was released in February of 1996.
Right? Familiar.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and I hated my high school band teacher, so I'm not even disposed to liking this movie given what he's teaching, right? But so one day on one of those afternoons, we didn't have a field experience. I went to see a matinee. And here was a guy, this character, Mr. Holland. A musician.
Did not like teaching.
Did not want to go into teaching. You know, one of my favorite lines in the film comes at the very beginning when his wife drags him out of bed and he goes, oh, this is a terrible idea. And he goes and he looks in the mirror. What time do I have to be there? And she goes, 7:30. What kind of people go to work at 7:30 in the morning? And I'm like, I can identify with this guy.
Exactly.
And then, of course, you know, it's a beautiful film that covers the course of his career. And I walked out of there with a whole new attitude. And then when I started going out in my field experience and stuff, I started discovering that I could make connections with these teenagers.
Yeah.
I could just sort of.
Yeah.
I could just sort of, I had that connection.
Yeah.
Right. And I thought, you know, this might be all right.
Yeah.
Well, the 8 years I spent as a high school teacher were probably among the happiest of my life.
Wow.
Yeah. I loved being a high school teacher. I taught for 3.5 years high school in Chino Valley, Arizona.
Yeah.
And then I relocated to Clay County, Florida.
Okay.
Where I taught in.
That was a big leap. How'd you go over there?
I had a connection with St. Augustine and stuff because my parents had a summer home there for a number of years. And so I had spent some time there. And I was ready to get out of Arizona, frankly. I was ready.
Some moisture,
grass, trees.
Some greenery.
Right. Instead of everything being brown.
Yeah.
I mean, it's brown where I grew up, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, a big change of scenery. And so I taught 4 more years at Clay County High School.
Yeah.
And then and coached girls basketball for a total of 5 years, actually.
Wow.
And then I went to Tallahassee and enrolled at Florida State in the PhD program in English education.
Okay.
So my 3 degrees, I only have 1 education degree, and that's the last one.
Interesting. So well, that sheds a little bit of light to my next question. It's like, why'd you pick this topic? It's such an interesting one about performance of teaching and what that's like. And you already alluded to it maybe a bit with Mr. Holland's Opus, but why this topic? And of all the things you could have picked, why this?
Well, I've always been fascinated by the way really good teachers, or at least teachers that I experienced as being really good for me as a student, I was always fascinated at the way persona operates in the classroom.
Oh.
Right. And what a huge difference it makes.
Yeah.
Because, and I wrote about this in your blog piece a little bit, but I mean, we've all had teachers who are obviously brilliant in their areas. I mean, brilliant, accomplished scholars and everything like that. But you get them in the classroom and.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's no connection, no learning happens.
Here. Right. And so they have all this knowledge, but they don't have the means. Through their personality, through their voices, they don't have the means of conveying it.
Okay.
You know, and so when I was asked by Dr. Radcliffe back in 2015 to write this communication course for our Master of Arts in Teaching program.
Right.
You know, that's where it started. Because it allowed me to tap into these early passions from my undergrad years and stuff like that.
Yeah.
When I was working in radio.
Yeah.
And I was doing this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm not just going to talk about how to align your standards to the objectives, you know, kind of thing. Now I'm going to talk about, you know, persona.
Yeah.
And so I tried to design a class, and then we've since expanded it to the undergrad.
Yeah.
It's become required in many of their program of studies.
Yes.
And I feel bad for them for that.
Yeah.
I would actually prefer for them to be there voluntarily, yeah. but it's required in many of their, and not just our teacher ed majors, but speech pathologists have to take it.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a lot of ASL interpreters in the class as well. So
you teach this in your class, but where do you see, do you think generally, maybe not just here at VSU, but what you know of other education preparation programs, are we doing enough to support teachers in this area? Because I never had a class like what you described. I had a communications class, but it was taught by mm-hmm. communications person, had nothing to do with sort of the acting as a teacher, mm-hmm. which I think is really important. So what do you think we're doing a good job generally? In our education system?
Well, I mean, on the whole, probably not. Again, I don't think this is something that we need to overhaul all our EPPs with. And then now suddenly our teacher candidates are going to spend half their time in acting classes and, you know, and everything like as much as that would please me.
Yeah.
You know, that's not very practical. We get four semesters if we're lucky to train a teacher and that's it.
Yeah.
An entire semester of that time is going to be spent in their culminating internship and their student teaching experience.
All right.
You know, and so that gets us down to three.
All right.
Right. So there's not a lot of time for a lot of this, but I do agree with at least the approach that we're taking here that we should have some of it.
Yeah.
So that these ideas aren't alien to them.
Yeah.
You know, that there is, and especially as we're coming out of COVID, and many of these students that are sitting in my class are 19, 20 years old, which means they were in high school during the plague.
The COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Do you think that some people are, I've heard this even when I was in undergrad working on my teaching degree, was, you know, some people are born with it and they just got the magic touch, mm-hmm. and then some people don't. And they have to work harder at it. But looking back on it, I think what they were really trying to say was some people are better actors and performers. Mm-hmm. So the relationships snap together easier maybe, or your ability to relate the content to them in a way that's more relevant for them versus people that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts about that? Are people born good teachers and are good actors and other people aren't? Or
is there such thing as a born teacher?
Yeah,
this is a great question. You know, technically I suppose I should say no. Mm-hmm. You know,
because otherwise what are we doing here,
it offends our sense of egalitarianism.
That's right.
And, you know, and our capacity to get everybody, you know, up to speed.
Yeah,
but some people do have, you know, different sets of talents.
Yeah.
You know,
that's fair.
And so in, you know, like in the communication class, for example, and I make this very, very clear because I'm not worried about the ones who come in who are natural performers, who did high school drama, who have been on the debate club, you know, who have done these kinds of things. They're very comfortable and they just have a blast in the class. Yeah. I mean, for them, it's just fun. Mm. The ones that I'm most concerned about are the ones that are petrified.
Yeah.
And as soon as they come in and on day one, and I'm talking about the stuff that they're going to be doing over the course of the semester, repeatedly standing up in front of the class, talking, repeatedly doing these kinds of exercises, they're absolutely petrified.
Yeah.
And I did, I just a scant little like research, like Google, you know, but I was amazed when I found out how many surveys, when Americans are surveyed, many, like an unhealthy high percentage, they fear public speaking more than they fear death.
Oh. Wow, I've never heard that.
This has come up in a number of surveys.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
You would think death, there wouldn't be anything we would fear more than that, right? You know, the end of our consciousness, the end of our mortality. I mean, oh my God, it's the existential nightmare.
Right.
But no, standing up in front of a group of people and talking scares some people more than the prospect of their own mortality.
So what can we do better to prepare our teachers for this topic that you're talking about? What can we do, or what are maybe some things that you do in your class that maybe other people could do, or if it's a teacher, student teaching right now that still is kind of struggling with being a better actor, maybe what are some things they can do?
Mm-hmm. Well, even before we started the communication class, I started sneaking some of this in my other courses anyway.
Yeah.
And one of the things I did from the very beginning, and part of this came out of my experience from the National Writing Project.
Okay.
And that is teaching demonstrations. I think teaching demonstrations are a great way to prepare candidates prior to when they go out and actually start doing more things in the field.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before they're in front of kids, like demonstrating in front of their class.
Right.
Okay.
Because they're never going to find a safer audience than people that are in the same boat as they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I would have them, like, for example, if I was doing the lesson planning class, I would have them do at least once, if not twice a semester, take a lesson plan that they had produced as part of that course, and then teach us.
Yeah.
And get up in front of the class and teach us.
And maybe if we did that in every single class, which maybe we are, honestly, I'm not even sure, but maybe if we did that in every class, it reinforces, because you get the students, at least in undergrad, pretty early on. Mm-hmm. And so maybe if we were doing that every step of the way, that at least gives them more opportunities to practice.
I think so. I mean, again, the problem is, you know, we would love to take 10 years to teach a teacher, right? Like they're Jesuits, you know, and to take 10 years for their formation, you know, we would love to have that kind of time, but we don't. And so, you know, what can we do, you know, to get them as ready the best we can?
Yeah.
And this communication thing. And when I've seen students that I've supervised in the field, watching them teach, when I've seen them falter, it's almost always an issue that can be traced back to communication.
I agree with that. I've had that same experience. Well, we're going to take a quick little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about this idea of the teacher actor and what else we can do to help teachers that might be struggling in this area.
This podcast is brought to you by Ricky Z Social Media.
Okay, welcome back to Teacher Talks here at Valdosta State University. Again, I have here J.T. Cox, a professor in education and a self-proclaimed actor as a teacher. So one thing you mentioned in your blog that you wrote is how you assess students. So when they're doing their teaching demonstrations, they're worried about their grade and they're wondering what the rubric looked like. And you don't, I assume you grade them, but not in any maybe formal way. Can you describe what that looks like for you?
Oh, sure. And let me preface my remarks by saying that I don't have the most orthodox approach to grades, you know. And in fact, in some ways, I think grades are sort of damaging to the learning process, you know, when they become the sole focus. And we've all had the grades assess kids in our class. It decreases risk taking. Students are afraid to take risks, and if we don't take any risks in the learning process, we're not really stretching ourselves out. We're not really learning anything, right?
Yeah.
It's going to involve some risks. And so, like, for example, I always use this example: if we give our students three options for a project, okay, you can do this, or you can take this test, or you can do this project. The real super grade conscious students, they're going to choose the safest one that they could possibly choose.
Yep.
Probably something they've already done before that they're already comfortable with.
Yep.
Now, they might like to try this wild and crazy thing that looks like it might be fun to try, but they're worried about the grade. I don't want this to hurt my grade and my GPA. And so they choose the safest way.
All right.
So in my approach to grades, and again, I'm a little bit of an iconoclast when it comes to them is, you know, I'm sort of a mastery content kind of a person. If a student hands in something to me, which is just completely unacceptable, just not even close to a remark, I hand it back to them with some feedback, and I give them the opportunity to try again.
Okay.
Rather than hand in the lousy assignment, get the lousy grade, and move on from there. I said, no, you're not going to like, if I put a grade on this, you're not going to like it.
So how do you think that translates into classroom teachers? Like elementary, middle, high school teachers, do you think they would be able to do something like what you're describing?
I got away with it, but I was occasionally called out on it. Mm-hmm. And I've even here at VSU, I've been once or twice. Mm-hmm. I've had an authority figure ask me, how come so many kids get A's in your class? I mean, the overwhelming majority of students are walking out of your class with an A. How is that?
Yeah.
All right. So here's my philosophy. Here's why I do it. And you can tell me whether you think this makes any sense. And different teachers approach things in different ways. And some teachers are really good at applying pressure in order to test character.
Mm-hmm.
We see this, for example, in Parris Island, South Carolina, in the Marine Corps depot, recruit depot in San Diego. I mean, Marine DIs are teachers.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
And it's high pressure. and excruciating kind of a thing to go through, right? Mm. I'm going through something that's a little bit different.
Yeah.
I'm trying to bring down the pressure, okay,
yeah,
so that students can more engage with the activities and things we're doing in class,
yeah,
and not have to worry so much about their grade, yeah, but just do the best they can with the activities that are in front of them.
Don't you think they would take advantage of that as K-12 students? They just always do the bare minimum, whatever the lowest you're willing to take.
I don't know. Again, I mean, just thinking back to my high school days, and again, I pretty much had the same philosophy of grading my entire career. I mean, again, I had high school principals saying, "How come so many kids are getting A's in your class?" Yeah. You know. Change the subject and then get out of his office and then go back and hide in my room. Right.
Yeah.
but again, I don't want him to worry about that outcome so much as just to focus in the moment with what we're doing and to get the most out of this as we're doing.
Yeah.
Now that said, if I'm handing out a bunch of A's in my class, are all these A's created equal? They're not.
No.
Some of the quality of the work of some students was far superior to maybe somebody else that ended up with the same grade. And some people would say, you know what, JT, that's not fair. That's not just. I suppose it's not. I mean, you know, I don't think any of us has a perfect approach to education,
and that's fair.
But I want to bring that pressure down and bring that emphasis down.
What I hear you saying, like from a behaviorist standpoint, is like it's the difference between extrinsic motivation, like the drill sergeant, and intrinsic motivation. You're trying to like develop this. You want them to do it because they're excited about the learning process.
Right.
And which is way more powerful than they're doing it to avoid the punishment of an F, or, you know, they're doing it to get this letter grade. But that means they'll do exactly what they have to do to get the letter grade. Or to avoid the lower grade. But there's no enjoyment from it. It's more of education becomes a chore, checklist of things versus, I think if they were intrinsically motivated, they find joy in that, continue doing it best.
I agree. I mean, that's pretty much what I'm after is that extrinsic motivation.
Yeah.
I mean, as you think about, and you can tell me whether this is different in your life, but with me, many things that I have been completely engaged in as far as learning and I'm having fun, I have no degree to show for it.
Yeah.
I told you I studied philosophy for 2 years, right?
Yeah.
At the graduate level.
Yeah.
I mean, I have some background in that.
Yeah.
I have no degree and I can't remember what grades I got in the class, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I have a transcript out there somewhere, but I got to study the history of Western thought and all these thinkers and all their ideas and stuff like that. And it was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the same for me too. So I my listeners probably know by now I'm a musician, and, you know, things that I obsess over never see the light of day sometimes, right? But it's meaningful for me and shapes me as a person as well. So that's interesting. So kind of getting back to this idea of grades and like keeping up motivation of students, how do teachers, because you advocate for, you know, the maintaining of enthusiasm while you're teaching, how do they do that when they have to wake up at 7:30 in the morning and start teaching? And what if they're not morning people? How do they maintain that?
Well, I'm not a morning person.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught, you know, for the better part of 9 years at, the late bell in my last high school rang at 7:23. Mm-hmm. At the first high school I taught in Arizona, the principal had me coming in and doing like a pre-class.
Ugh.
So I actually had one that started one school year. I had one that started at 7 a.m. And so it's not easy for someone like me who's so nocturnal and my energy is so orientated towards the night to get up, you know, at the ass crack of dawn,
right?
You'll excuse my French, and perform.
Yeah.
But this is part of what we talk about in the class a little bit. There's something in each of us that needs to get turned on when the time is.
Yeah.
And this is kind of how I talk about communications with them, you know, because they don't believe me when I tell them this, but I'm extremely introverted. I'm not an extrovert.
Interesting.
Right.
I don't see that.
No, I hide and cower in my apartment and stuff like that. When I'm not out.
When you leave here, you'll go home and cry.
Right. Right. Like this is energy for me now to do this.
Yeah.
And I'll go and do a few things in my office when we're done with this conversation. Then I'm going to go hide in my apartment.
Yeah.
Right. But right now, see, I'm asked to do this. I'm asked to engage with somebody else in a conversation.
Right.
I have to step up.
Yeah.
I can be tired later. I can go back to sleep. I can curl up in a fetal position on my couch later on. Right?
Yeah.
Right now, it's showtime.
Yeah.
Okay? And so I tell the students, nice. When the late bell rings, what time is it?
Showtime.
It's showtime.
Yeah, I saw that in the blog. I like that idea.
Right. And so that's the way I try to get him to think about it, you know? And part of what got me going in this was my first high school teaching gig. Mm-hmm. Of course, when you're new at a high school, they give you all of the some of the worst classes. So I had 5 sections of freshman English.
Mm.
5. And it really got me into this mentality of sort of being a Vegas showman, because as the day went on, the class got better as I started to tweak stuff.
Yeah.
Or I might try a joke with first hour and it doesn't work. And it fixed something second hour and come back third hour with something else.
Yeah.
So there is that sense of how do I make the next performance better?
All right.
When the curtain comes up again, okay, on the same class. Yeah. It's going to be the same script, the same play we're performing.
Yeah.
But when the curtain comes up again, how am I going to do it differently? And so I did this through that repetition of doing 5 freshman classes a day, reading the same act of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I practically knew that play by heart.
Yeah.
Because I was reading the same thing 5 times repeatedly throughout the day. So that repetition helped me develop as a sort of classroom performer.
Yeah.
Because it gave me 1 prep to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to worry about, okay, now I got to prepare American history for juniors.
Yeah.
I had the one thing.
Yeah.
And I could just try to make it better all day long. So I used to say, I'm a Vegas act. I do 5 shows a day.
That's funny you said that. I taught middle school for a while and I had that opportunity for a little bit teaching the same content over. And I noticed the same thing. Even now, actually, if I have two sections on the same day, the first section goes whatever it goes, but I can tweak stuff for the second section. And it's always, I bet there's a study in there looking at like SOI scores from like the morning class, the afternoon class, the afternoon might do better. And then again, after teaching it the second year, the same class, I can feel it getting better. And so I think that's something like that our new teachers can sort of take heart in is the repetition, you know, keep going and practicing it. Sometimes I tell my students, you know, I do the teaching activities too. And first person do it, just started crying like in front of her peers. And I was like, okay, we're going to push through this. But I recommended it and I asked her, how many times did you practice it? She's like, well, not at all. I was like, okay, well, that might be something you look at, like in the mirror, practice it. Mm-hmm. Practice saying these words so you're not stumbling over your speech and feeling awkward.
So this was a presentation they had to do
in my class this semester.
She knows
who she is.
The first presentation of the semester?
Yeah, first.
And so she got up there in front of the class and
she started, and I was trying to do the small teaching thing. If you read that book last semester, small teaching, He said, you know, that same thing you're describing, practicing your presentation. And so he would take class time to practice presentation. Well, they were doing their teaching activities and she started and was kind of fumbling and talking soft. And I was like, okay, just stop and start over. That's all I said. And she started and it was better. And then she started reading again. And I was like, okay, just stop and start over. I mean, she was nervous the whole time. And then she cried and the other students are like, oh, I can take her spot. I was like, no. Like, we're going to push through this because like if you go sit down now, the next time you have to come back up and finish it, it's going to be psychologically for you. It's going to be even worse. We're just going to do it now. And I'll be damned if she didn't. And it was pretty damn good. The third time around, through the tears, like her makeup smudged. But the third time she powered through it. And well, she came to class the next class period and has been coming since. So I guess I didn't run her off.
Right. She didn't withdraw from the university.
And she shouldn't have. I mean, she, you know, but she pushed through and she got a chance to practice it. And a point was made to everyone, I hope. And like you said, it's a positive environment with people that were like, we love you. You know, it's elementary ed class.
I mean, you asked me a few minutes ago what sort of support we can give the students.
Mm.
You know, I mean, we're not going to be able to pile on a bunch of classes to their programs of study. We just don't have time.
Right.
So I think you're exactly on to the right thing within your course.
Yes.
Coach them up.
Yeah.
You know, have them, first of all, have them present stuff to their peers. You know, and then coach them through that.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, again, you're natural hams and comedians and performers. It's easy. They make your job easy.
Yeah.
But the others we have to draw out.
Yeah.
You know,
but I think it's to their benefit.
Yes.
It's uncomfortable in the moment. But again, that's why I like your grading philosophy, because if they're not worried about their grade, that's a little less stress, because they're not getting graded when they're teaching. Not really. The teacher keys is not really grading. it's not really grading. Four categories doesn't mean anything. Everyone gets a two or a three. But anyway,
that's right.
but it's, I try to tell them, you're not doing it for a grade. You're doing it to teach kids and to build those relationships. You have to do that in order to teach them. So
great.
Anything else you want to add that you think we didn't talk about that you think maybe you want our listeners to hear?
Well, only that, again, the students that I try to focus on the most, that I'm most concerned about, yeah, are the ones that are the most reticent. Mm-hmm. The ones that, like you said, the one whose mascara is running down her face because she's just feeling completely humiliated in this thing. Well, I'm sorry, but we're not training online instructors.
Yeah.
We're training classroom teachers.
Right, yeah.
You're going to be in a room with people, in a building with people, looking them in the eye, articulating your voice, not just typing things, right? So you're going to have to cross this bridge.
No.
But I do tell my, my reticent students as a way of trying to reassure them, I'm not asking you to be something you're not.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay. So you're going to look at your peers and some of them are going to be the natural actors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's okay. And you're not. That's okay. I'm not asking you to be something you're not. I'm asking you to be a bigger version of what you are.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So if you have a straight up deadpan, you know, sort of presentation, that's your presentation.
Yeah.
But I want you to, let's turn the volume up on
right. That. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's be a bigger version of the deadpan teacher in front of class.
So it's more commanding, more engaging. It doesn't have to be a production, right? It just has to be clear and articulate, and you have to be comfortable in what you are.
That's right.
I like that.
And you don't necessarily have to be a wild and crazy guy. I mean, or gal, you know, but just whoever you are, whatever your personality is, you know, engage.
Yeah. I like that. Okay. Well, thank you all so much for listening to this episode. Hope to hear you back for some more. And if you're interested in more of what JT is saying, again, check the blog. And the link will be found, I think, in the description of this podcast, if I remember to do that. And feel free to comment and reach out to him via his VFU email. All right. Thank you so much.
Teacher Talks at Valdosta State University is produced by Ricky Z Social Media and is brought to you by the Dewar College of Education and Human Services and the Department of Teacher Education at Valdosta State University.